It is Saturday, March 14th. Happy Pi Day. 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, geek news and a discussion about new ways of interacting with computers. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. We have a great show lined up today. Geek News, special guest David Merrill to chat with us about interfacing with computers with your body, not just your mouse and keyboard. And I also want to mention that during the show, we will be taking pledges. You're welcome to call us anytime you'd like. The phone numbers are 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. Miles, do you want to go ahead and give us some thank yous?
Yes, like give a thank you from Bob, who loves Dr. Don. From Margaret, saying Saturday morning is great. Dr. Don waking up with KOSP every morning. And Nicolette. Also Melinda. One of Don's patients, he says to tell Don Great. Hello. Steve, who listens all day long to Dr. Don Geeks and likes to talk radio. And Catherine. Thank Great. You all for your pledges.
Those are all people that pledged in the last hour, but you can be one of them for this hour. Just pick up the phone right now, 888-777-1507, and we will be asking for their donations during the show. And I want to mention that during the Geek Speak Hour, we do have a $500 matching grant from an anonymous colleague of mine up at UCSC. Thank you very much for the donation. That means that every dollar that you contribute, the UCSC faculty member will also match your dollar up to $500. So please feel free to take advantage of that during the entire hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks. Al Luckow. He's a new media architect. Good morning, Al.
Good morning.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't try that again. Good morning, Al.
Hello. Hello.
Oh, that's
hello.
So nice. It's good to see you. Yeah. Ben Jaffe. He's a freelance media guy. Morning, Ben.
Morning.
We have Miles Elam, student programmer and political junkie.
Good morning.
Hey, Miles. March, this month, right now, 9 years of Geek Speak. We've only been doing it for less than that. Oh, wait. Is it longer than that? No, it's 9 years, I think. Pretty impressive, huh?
Wait,
10 years?
11.
11 years. Oh, that's what it is. We've been doing it 9 years. It's been going on for 11 years. That's what it is.
Well, okay. Just under 9 years, yeah. Yeah.
Sounds like math.
It is. Oh, my gosh.
How fitting on Pi Day.
Yeah, is it it's National Pi Day?
Yes, it's National Pi Day. Congress has actually made it National Pi Day.
And, of course, Pi meaning, 3.14 and so on, and it's March 14th.
So now we're counting down to 1:59 p.m., so we'll have 3.14159.
Well, it depends. What if you're doing 1,500 hours instead of 1:59?
Then it's already passed. That's too sad.
No, that's 3 o'clock today.
Except for the fact that there is no 92 minutes.
Oh, ooh, so we're gonna have to use 24-hour time then.
We also have David Merrill. He's a PhD candidate from MIT Media Lab. Hi, David.
Hi.
And David, you'll be joining us soon. We'll talk a lot about your research, and actually, you're gonna participate in news with us, which is kind of fun for us. So.
Indeed, I am.
So, actually, you know what? Before we do that, let's make sure that people know that it is a pledge show, which means we're asking for your money.
Is this one of those things where you ask people to donate money over the air and all
yes,
that?
Yes. Oh, this is your first pledge drive, isn't it, Al?
Yeah, I'm the new guy. So what happens if people don't donate?
I wonder what could happen if people didn't donate to KOSP.
Yeah, hey there. This is Big Al and the Polka Boys. Get ready for a full hour of polka, polka, polka. So get off your dupa and dance.
Oh, man, that's scary.
That is scary.
So, okay.
So that is scary.
What are people supposed to do then? Call in or mail or go to the website or?
Yeah, actually all that. You can call right now, 888-777-1507, or go to the website.
Come on,
people, KOSP.org.
How much do people have to give?
You know, we don't define how much you have to give to be a member and to participate in the station. It's basically whatever you feel that you can afford. For example, you could give a little... Well, what's a luxury expense that you spend every month, Al?
I don't know. My cheese budget, maybe, I guess.
Okay, cheese.
What?
How much do you spend on cheese per month?
The exact amount is confidential, but I get what you mean.
Okay, so let's assume you're going to reduce your amount of monthly cheese consumption by $10. And you'll just take that $10 and give it to KOSP every month. And that gives KOSP $120 a year. It's pretty nice.
No, from your credit card or something?
Yeah.
So then after a year, it just automatically turns off?
Yeah.
So we're talking about Al cutting his cheese.
Hey, I cut the cheese for Geek Speak. I encourage listeners to do the same.
You know, I know this is a bit cheesy, but seriously, folks... There's one way that you can send a message to KOSP, that public radio, your public radio station, that you like the programming, that you want to hear Geek Speak every Saturday. You go online right now, kosp.org, or call 888-777-1507. Right now, during this program, and make a pledge of support. It only takes about 2 minutes. You make a contribution and continue the conversation we have been having for over 9 years. Pledge the Geek Way at kosp.org or call right now at 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. Thank you.
And right now, we still have $500 to go on our challenge, so call right away and thank you. Also, you can go for $10 a month. That is less than Al spends on cheese each month. In fact, that's the amount that he could give up on cheese each month. So
let's not talk about my cheese. We've got enough.
So make your contribution today at kosp.org or call 1-888-777-1507.
All right. Since we've teased Al about cheese, let's start you off with
news. I can quit anytime I want. Okay, well, we've already seen Google kind of take the world by storm. Somehow they managed to buy up every cool search technology around and practically give everything away free and yet still make zillions of dollars. I'm not sure how that works exactly. Sounds fishy. But regardless, I ran across a new search technology being developed by somebody besides Google. It's, wow, really?
Wow.
Who could that be? It's Stephen Wolfram. He's the guy that... He got his PhD in theoretical physics from Caltech in 79 when he was 20. And in 1988, he launched Mathematica.
Ah, Mathematica. That's a great application.
Yeah, he's like a genius guy. So anyhow, he's developed a way of creating a search that it's still based on the same structure of Google as one search box, but it's just vastly smarter than Google, where Google simply retrieves documents based on keyword searches. Google doesn't really understand the question or the answer and doesn't compute answers based on models of various human knowledge. That the search engine for Wolfram, it's called Wolfram Alpha, and you actually can go and see the page. It's wolframalpha.com. We'll put that on the
site, yeah.
Yeah, but it doesn't work yet, but it's supposed to be starting, I think, in May.
Okay.
But what it really does is it computes answers to questions. And it uses built-in models of fields of knowledge, complete with data and algorithms that represent real-world knowledge. So, for example, it contains a model of what we know about science, massive amounts of data about various physical laws and properties, as well as about the physical world. Based on this, you can ask scientific questions, and it can compute the answers for you, even if it has not been programmed explicitly to answer each question you ask.
Can you give us an example of this?
Yes.
I'll try to make one from your description.
I'm trying to.
Can it involve cheese?
How about something like? Would it be something like what's in pancakes? And then it would go, well, pancakes is a thing, and I can find an ingredient for that. So this is what's in pancakes. Like that kind of algorithmic understanding of language. Is it more like I want to fill up my? Well, I'm trying to give.
He's basically converting language to an algebraic formula. In science, it's just one of the things it knows about technology, okay, geography, weather, cooking, business, travel. You know, it has a natural language interface for asking it questions. This interface allows you to ask questions in plain language or even in various forms of abbreviated notation, and then it provides detailed answers. All you really need to be able to do is just ask it in plain natural language, and then the software will represent them in a precise form that fits into the computations it can do.
Oh, okay, so it's actually the answer. I mean, getting the answer of the question is not the big deal. Like Google can do that. But yeah. It's more about that it reads the question in a natural form and then answers it in a natural form.
Right,
so
it converts the question.
How tall am I in meters
If I'm 4 feet 11,
right,
4 foot 11, and it would say you are this tall in meters,
right? And he's, okay,
it wouldn't
using,
give you a bunch of websites. It wouldn't with give you a converters, bunch,
no, or it wouldn't even give right. you a mathematical equation, which Google does. It would give you the right. answer in an English language.
So it's cool. going to be cool, and that's coming out, I believe, in May.
We'll have to keep our.
So it's going to be neat. I mean, this guy is a genius. So we'll see what happens.
All right, Ben.
Yeah, I just want to talk about briefly FFmpeg, which is a set of audio compression, audio and video. Mm-hmm. Audio and video compressions. So we've got all of these open source media players like VLC. A lot of people have VLC. That's probably the most popular mm-hmm. M player. Especially if you have Linux, it's extremely important. And FFmpeg is kind of the library that drives all of those things. It's been years since there's been a release of FFmpeg, and so a lot of people were kind of taking it for dead. Some things have been trickling in with nightly builds and everything, but they finally released the long-awaited version 0.5, codenamed Halfway to World Domination. So,
And just to give you a clear understanding of this, if you have a video on your computer and you want to do something with it, like edit it or put it on a DVD or republish it on Google or something, there's always this problems of what codec it is and how to deal with it and stuff. And a while ago when it first came out, FFmpeg was the answer to that. You throw anything at it. But then it slowly has not been able to handle stuff. And what you're saying now, they've revamped it. It's now can handle most things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can it handle real, though? Because that's
it can handle real. That's actually one of the most exciting things. I don't ever want real player to ever be on my hard drive. I don't want to install
the devil.
It because
yeah,
it's the devil. And you know, anyway. So I don't want the devil on my hard drive, and so that's why I use VLC. And recently, you know, like there are certain real player formats that it can't handle. But one of the biggest features of 0.5 is that it can release or it can handle all of the real player formats because they reverse engineered them.
Very cool. All right, so, thank you very much, Ben.
Good news on the audio video wavefront.
Miles,
some sad news. Recently, the California Academy of Sciences. Made a national survey or commissioned a national survey asking about general basic science questions and what Americans could answer. Only a little more than half, 53% of adults, know how long it takes for the Earth to revolve around the sun.
Accounting for leap years of side
they're
effects?
They're not asking for to the second. They're just asking for, you know, a general thing, like, I don't know, 365 days.
Well, they're asking for a concept is what they're asking for, because people don't link
people know how long
the span of a year to...
Off, maybe they know it's a year. They just don't know how long a year is. So they could say 52 weeks or 12 months. That'd be okay too, right?
I think those are the outliers.
Okay. Only 59% of adults know that the earliest humans and dinosaurs did not live at the same time.
Ooh. Is this U.S. adults?
Yes.
Only
47% of adults can roughly approximate the percent of the Earth's surface that's covered with water. Now, they're being fairly loose with that, saying if you say two-thirds or if you say three-quarters, they're fine anywhere in there. The exact answer, by the way, is 70%. But any of that variance would be fine. But only less than half of the people could answer that correctly.
I think the days and year thing is sadder.
And with those three questions, only 21% of adults answered all three questions correctly. So a bunch of people may have gotten a question correct, but they didn't get all three correct.
That's pretty sad. So we fail.
Yes.
We're failure.
Now, only one in five Americans has a basic science literacy.
I think we have a better rate in this room.
And there's five of us in here. So which one is it?
Hey, there's $380 left to go on the challenge. You can go right now to KOSP.org. And while you're listening to the show, if you're in front of a computer, you can donate and still have your dollar match to match up to $380. The phone numbers are 888-777-1507. David, hi.
Hey.
This week, the reason why you're kind of in town is you've been with O'Reilly at what? What have you been doing?
So I've been at the Emerging Technology Conference over in San Jose this week. And there's been a lot of cool stuff, a lot of geeky, interesting technological developments. And I thought I'd tell you about one of them to start.
Yeah, because this conference has tons of stuff in it, right?
Right. So it's hard to pick one. And actually, I don't like picking my favorite or the coolest. But here's one that I think is pretty interesting. A friend of mine that I know from grad school, Nathan Eagle, has started this service called Text Eagle. And basically, do you know about the Mechanical Turk service by Amazon?
Only because you told me earlier today.
Okay. Right. So
but this is that micropayment task thing. So if I say, hey, I want to know how to make pancakes, I can send a message off to this and say, I'll pay 5 cents. And then someone out there goes, oh, for 5 cents, I'll go look up a recipe and send it back to you. So it's like a way to distribute work.
Right. So it's kind of like the flat world idea that anyone with an internet connection and some spare time on their hands can make a little bit of money, no matter where they are. So Text Eagle takes this idea and puts it on cell phones. And so anyone in the developing world that's got a cell phone and a little spare time can log in and get an SMS with some task, like a translation task or something.
And we're talking about a lot of people have cell phones.
Right. Yeah. So he actually was in Africa and realized there's a lot of people with cell phones and spare time.
And he said this is a work pool, right?
Right, right, exactly. Yeah. And they would love to have a way to get money into these villages that are very remote and don't really have ways to earn money otherwise.
Oh, very cool. So what would they be able to – let's say someone I'm in the bush somewhere in Africa and I happen to have a cell phone coverage and cell phone and something to charge it with. What could I do in that location? How could I service somebody? Like what would I be able to do?
Well, one thing you could do would be to translate something into your native language. Right?
So if I knew two languages, I could be making money.
Right. So yeah. Cell phone companies are trying to get phones out to everybody in the world, right? But they need like the menus and all the items that are in the phone to be translated into a million different languages.
And these are really just short words and such.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, cool. So that'd be one off right there.
Exactly, yeah.
And then if you're talking about somebody being able to spend just to get a little bit of money in that space, at least brings a revenue source into that community.
Right. So they might be getting, you know, cell phone credits. That's one way that currency works in some of these developing areas rather than cash. And then at a certain point, those cell phone units convert to money and they get a bank account opened.
All right. We're running out of time for news, but you know what? One other thing that happened there that you saw, or just give a list of things that you thought were pretty cool at the Emerging
Sure,
Tech.
Sure, a list of just really quick. Yeah. So Bunny Huang, the creator of the Chumbi, talked about how they manufactured it. This guy, Derek Lomas of PlayPower, is using the guts of NES machines that are being remanufactured in China to provide like $12 computers to the developing world.
Which have like an operating system and everything.
Yeah, it sort of looks like Windows, but it's not. But you know, has like
Windows.
A start menu. Yeah, it's 8-bit Windows, exactly. Bug Labs, this company that's doing programmable hardware so software developers can actually make little gadgets without having to do electronics.
Oh, cool.
All kinds of stuff. Rafi Kerkorian was there from WattsOn, which is a website that lets you calculate your personal energy footprint easily.
Yeah, I saw that you've got a WattsOn on your homepage at MIT.
Right.
Talking about how much power you're using all the time.
Yeah, it's a big problem. It's really hard to know what your personal contribution is. So they're trying to make it easy for people to know. And
of course, if you've got a number, you can compete with people to reduce.
Exactly, yeah.
Miles would win because he bikes everywhere or walks everywhere, buses. Thank you very much for that,
no problem.
David. Al.
Yeah, just a quick tip for people who have journals, online journals. There's been a number of live journal break-ins lately. And the live journal gave an official explanation as to how it's happening, which I found kind of fascinating. What's happening is Hotmail. People are registering with Hotmail accounts. So the problem appears to stem from Hotmail's policy of recycling inactive email addresses. The recent break-ins resulted from hijackers finding and accessing lapsed Hotmail accounts that were used with live journal accounts and publicly displayed on the profile pages. So what it is Hotmail recycles their addresses. So if you haven't used the Hotmail address for a while, for more than a year, and you haven't validated it, Hotmail just recycles it.
So I get a Hotmail account for some time in my life. I go up to LiveJournal. I sign up for my account with using Hotmail as my email. They send a confirmation email. I activate. I start using LiveJournal. I never really think about what the email address is. Mm-hmm. I stop using the email address from Hotmail. Mm-hmm. Hotmail recycles it. You create an account using that email address.
Someone finds it, re-registers the address.
And then you can take over my LiveJournal.
Can use it to obtain control over whatever.
Interesting.
Which I think is a good tip because a lot of people are just getting email addresses over and over, you know, because it's free. You know, you got to remember, if you're using them for things, you know, Hotmail, for one, recycling. I mean, there's only so many words.
Is it also a LiveJournal issue where they're not allowing you to erase emails from your account? Or is it really
just a sloppy? You can change your account.
Well, they have an interesting policy on that. You have to add another email address, and then you have to wait 6 months, I believe.
Oh,
and then you can delete it. It's something like that.
Right, and what you're thinking really is that no one's going to be able to use my Hotmail account. So though it's on there, it doesn't really matter because it's still my Hotmail account. But if you've not used it, it's all of a sudden gone. You don't even know it.
Yeah, and the problem is when you want to change the Hotmail account, it's a two-step process, and it has this big lapse of time in between, so you're very, very likely to forget to follow through.
Right.
You just got to remember remember what email addresses you have out there because they're being recycled.
It's gotten
to that point.
We're going to get back to a discussion about geek news, and we're also going to get into a really detailed discussion about the stuff that David does. Really cool. So stay with us through this little interruption in what we're going to be talking about for the geek news. We've got to do another pledge break. Sorry. And this time, let's not make fun of cheese, okay?
Oh, yeah. Okay, okay. So I have to defend a few things because we made jokes about Poca, and we did make jokes about cheese. But Poca's kind of cool, and cheese is super tasty. That's not a bad enough situation for me. I mean, if you guys don't donate to KUSP, what would replace us? What's the worst that could happen?
You mean what's the worst if KUSP went off air and some other signal took over? What's the absolute worst thing that could happen?
Yeah. It can't be that bad, right?
Shameless of Michael J. Fox. He is exaggerating the effects of the disease. He is moving all around and shaking, and it's purely an act. Whenever I hear from any of these Middle East Al-Qaeda terrorists, I think I'm hearing Democrat Party talking points. Undeniable Truth of Life number 24, written back in 1987, feminism was established so as to allow unattractive women easier access to the mainstream of society.
Oh, that's awful.
That is awful. Let's not let that happen.
Man. That could have shown the major difference between commercial radio and public radio.
That public radio doesn't have commercials?
Not exactly. After all, a pledge drive is a kind of commercial.
Okay. Well, you mean the quality of the programming from public radio.
I'd like to think so. But it's more subtle than that. With commercial radio, it's about treating your listeners as a product to be bought and sold.
Bought and sold? What do you mean?
With the commercial media outlets, the advertisers are the clients, and the audience is actually the product. For Rush Limbaugh and Shock Jocks, it doesn't matter how inflammatory they get, because whether or not people love or hate them, they end up listening, and the station ends up collecting more product to buy and sell.
So a public radio station, they think of their client as the advertiser, and the people that come to them as the product. Okay.
Yes. That's
and
how
public radio is different?
Right. And public radio is different. We take out the middleman. Your dollars go directly to the programming. This also means that public radio has to strive for quality rather than just how shocking it is. Ultimately, KUSP shows are the product. You are the client. We've got to make it good.
But that's just half the equation. We need donations from listeners like you to keep delivering that programming to you. So your car, your home, your laptop. We're in the environment where a lot of news and information outlets are cutting back their investigative coverage, cutting back on reporters, cutting back on their pursuit of truth. A commitment to lifelong learning, like you have, I'm assuming, by listening to Geek Speak, a commitment to intellectual curiosity, like we all share, I'm hoping, are just two shared values that we have in common with our community of listeners and on the Central Coast. Other news outlets may be repeating the news, they may be shocking you and trying to get you to be there, but they are turning a profit. And instead of them turning a profit, let's all turn a profit. Let's all be shareholders in our community. At KUSP, we don't have shareholders, we have listeners. The Central Coast community, and simply put, we need your support now to continue the work we do. Donate what you can to KUSP.org. That means you can go open up your web browser right now, go to KUSP.org, donate what you think you can afford, or call 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507.
And an update on the challenge. Looks like we thank you so much for everyone who has donated so far. We still have $380 to go in our challenge. So every time you call in, we get a dollar for dollar matched, so doubling the money. So call in now during the hour, and a thank you goes out to Lauren, who loves Dr. Don.
And at $20 a month, you can get a really cool geeky gift thing. We have this radio, okay? It's a solar panel wind-up radio. It's a gift for a $20 a month donation. It's a flashlight, a radio, solar panel wind-up, and the thing that makes it really for Geek Speak is it's got a USB port, and you can charge USB devices with it.
Let me see that thing.
Yeah.
That is cool.
It's pretty cool.
Wow.
So you can crank it and charge your iPod
or your phone. I think the idea is, like, if you're in an emergency, you can crank it up and charge your cell phone and then not connect to the tower because it's an emergency. But no, you can charge your USB devices on it. So anyway, that, and if you can't do $20 a month, that's fine. You do what you think is fair, what you can afford to support your station. KUSP.org. Call 888-777-1507. Again, please call right now. 1-888-777-1507. Geek Speak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry using digital technology for less radiation and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. It's a love-hate relationship. Love your cars, hate it when they break. You'll love the car guys and hate to miss them when Click and Clack give their advice on things automotive. every Saturday right after Geek Speak. That's only a half an hour from now, right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. The geeks today are Miles Elam.
Good morning.
Ben Jaffe.
Good morning.
Al Luckow.
Hello.
And David Merrill.
Howdy.
David Merrill just defended his PhD in the Fluid Interface Group at the MIT Media Lab. David has a background in cognitive science and computer science, an MS from Stanford in computer science, and explores how our interactions with computation, with computers, can leave the limitations of the desktop interface behind. David develops physical digital tools that operate comfortably in our real-world environments to enable new forms of expressivity, problem-solving, and collaboration. David, you just did... A lot of people might be aware of that you just participated in the TED conference. But
right.
If you're not participating in TED and watching the videos online, do it. And you showed a thing called Siftables. Why are you into this kind of playing with things that aren't just a mouse and keyboard that have computational power?
Well, when we're kids, we grow up interacting with the world around us that's physical, playing with things like blocks and trucks and trains and other objects like that that are three-dimensional. And so we actually get really good at interacting with these things that we can reach out and grasp and move them around and arrange them spatially. And in fact, a lot of our intelligence is connected to spatial reasoning. So there's this problem that when most of us graduate to the use of computers in our daily lives, which most of us actually do,
sure.
That we've got this two-dimensional world all of a sudden, and we've got this keyboard that gives us like 101 buttons, and the mouse cursor, which is like a single digital fingertip to touch this information space.
A very delicate long-distance fingertip, right?
Right, right. And so we've kind of learned how to cope with this world of having one fingertip to touch the space, but imagine if you were sitting in front of a pile of Legos on the tabletop and somebody told you, well, you can only use one fingertip to play with these Legos and build with them.
So that's how you think of the interface with computers that we currently have. You think of it as a limitation in as much as we have to modify our really complicated body to fit into this very small way of interacting.
Yes, it's such a narrow channel of getting at what actually could be such a vast digital information space. It could be even more vast and with more possibilities than the real world around us.
And the mainstream world is understanding this to some degree. We have the iPhone that has the motion sensor, and some of the games are a little different. We have the Wii controller for the Wii. That idea that there's more ways of working with a computer, that's all kind of this gesture computing
right,
stuff that you're
yeah,
talking
so
about.
People are starting to get curious and get interested in that. I think also like Minority Report, this movie with this
sure.
three-dimensional spatial gesture where Tom Cruise was waving his hands around to interact with the database and other stuff, that people are starting to realize that, well, you know, maybe the mouse and keyboard, they're not the only way. You know, they're okay for some things. Like, I think the keyboard's pretty good for writing emails, but there's a lot of things that it's actually not that good at.
So Siftables are these devices about the size of a pack of matches.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if all our listeners know what a pack of matches look like, but pack of match size, and it's got a computer screen on it, and it's got ways of communicating. And you have a stack of them. Right now you've got five of them out,
yeah.
And they're playing little videos of people. And this is just kind of a demo of what they can do. They're each an individual computer, and they have a social awareness of some kind.
Right. Each one's actually a little interactive video tile that's gesture sensitive. So it's got the same kind of motion sensing as, say, a Nintendo Wii controller with the accelerometer.
Mm-hmm.
Can sense its neighbors when they get next to each other, can show video and graphics, and then can communicate wirelessly. So they can actually, they could be connected to your computer, or they could just talk to each other. And so the idea is that they give a physical embodiment to digital content items.
And this was what your talk was about, using Siftables as an example of showing that there's other ways we can communicate with computers, and we're going to see an explosion of this. I mean, it's got to have battery power supply. They're charged via USB, I'm assuming?
Yep, it's a little USB connector. It's got a lithium polymer battery that's probably a little smaller than the one in your cell phone, but the same basic idea.
And then some of the samples that you showed is, for example, I do a lot of photography, right? So I've mm-hmm. got tons of photographs. And to deal with tagging the photographs and grouping them into my family and my work photographs and maybe art shots that I might be taking, I have to go and click on each one and then assign it to a number. It's that one finger thing. Grab right. this with a finger, the mouse pointer, then click over on a word and then click the next one. And sometimes I can grab a few of them. But in general, there's not a lot of grouping like I can with colored blocks. If you gave me a whole bunch of colored blocks, I'd be able to split them into groups. So the idea with a system like this, the computers would dump 50 images to these Siftable things. You'd mm-hmm. organize them into groups, and you'd assign that group by just putting one of a word next to that group, and it and they would start to understand, okay, I'm associated with each other, and that information would be put back to the computer.
Right, or just even by pushing them into a pile. You know, like we,
right.
One of the cool things that we realized when we started building Siftables was that there were certain gestures or actions that we could borrow from the physical world. Right, so like putting our papers into a file in a file cabinet is one example, but also just pushing things into a pile together is something we do when we've got little objects. Like think back to the pile of Legos, right?
Right.
If you're organizing them by color or size or something, you're actually just going to be pushing them into piles.
So I don't have to push it into a pile and then say, this pile with my hands around it. It's just I've put it into a pile, therefore it's a group.
Right.
It's,
yeah,
it's that general idea of the space that we have around us.
Yeah, and so we can start to use those everyday gestures not only with the objects in our physical world, but as a way to start interacting with digital media too.
Now, there's other examples of this kind of work that you've done. You have this great this sound paintbrush, and it's a very different take than Siftables. Can mm-hmm. you talk about that again? I don't know what
sure,
it's called.
Yeah, that's called The Sound of Touch, and it's a project that I did with my colleague Hayes Raffle and another Robert Amy. And the idea was, well, the problem that motivated it was when we use these software tools to interact with digital audio, it's very formal and very high level. You know, you see the waveform on the
screen. I edit the show every week like that.
Right,
yeah,
so you know exactly what I'm talking about. You copy, you paste, but the problem is it doesn't connect with everything we know about sound from the physical world. Right, we grow up interacting with objects and textures, and we know, you know, even before I reach out and wrap my knuckles on this desktop, I already know kind of what it's going to sound like, or if I scratch my fingers through gravel or grass.
Right,
or,
we learn just like we learn how to manipulate objects, we learn how objects are going to interact in the,
right.
with sound.
So,
and,
yeah, so we've got all this knowledge about sound that, in a sense, is kind of rotting on the dock when we go to use digital audio
right.
manipulation tools. So what we made was this paintbrush where you can record a sound into it, and then it becomes a live way of manipulating that sound by scraping it across different physical textures. And so you can use that knowledge that you have about all these physical objects like AstroTurf or gravel or the bristles of a broom, but use it as a way to manipulate a digital audio sample.
Did it work?
It worked.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Musicians are interested in it. Like, we actually designed it thinking that Foley artists would be into it because they're the ones that put all the extra
yeah.
sounds in movies and TV shows. It turns out that sound designers were actually more interested because their goal is creating weird sounds.
New sounds.
Yeah, new sounds.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they actually have these huge libraries of sounds that they don't use as much as they could. They would rather actually just make a new one on
yeah.
the fly because it's easier than trying to modify some existing sound. So it's possible that a tool like The Sound of Touch could give people a way to actually leverage these big libraries of audio samples they have, but kind of blend it with physical manipulation on objects and textures.
So are you saying that we're going to start using the mouse and keyboard less and start having these more discrete devices? And the one thing is, you know, you have to make Siftables, you have to have those. Is the interface that, or the paintbrush, for example, is the interface that different and that expanding that it's going to start becoming a requirement? Like, what? Because one of the things about the designing software is I know the person has a keyboard and I know they have a mouse.
Right.
And then after that, you have to start designing software based off of what? Like, what are they going to have?
Right.
Are you seeing that there's going to be this edge where everyone will have Siftables, for example?
I think it is. It's going to get there. And one of the interesting examples is look at what happened with the Nintendo Wii, right? Like, that was actually brilliant on Nintendo's part, not only to create this platform that brought more people into gaming, like, you know, females mm-hmm. and elderly people that never thought they would play a video game, but also they managed to sneak this really cool gestural controller into all these living rooms, and people started hacking it and building their own stuff with it. You know, so you see there are these new possibilities for interaction that are gestural that come with that controller, and now people are exploring all kinds of new stuff that you can do with it. So yes, I think we will start to have a bigger ecosystem of tools for interacting with digital content that are beyond the mouse and keyboard.
Cool. We're going to talk about your trip to China. You saw a whole bunch of electronics and amazing stuff going on in China. You went with really cool people.
Yep.
We're going to talk about that in just a minute.
So, anyway, Lyle, I kind of came in late. How long has GeekSpeak been actually on the air?
And it was kind of confusing in the beginning. It's been on 11 years.
So people have been calling for 11 years?
Yes.
What happens if we just go off the air?
You mean if GeekSpeak just stops being here?
Just stops.
What happens? I wonder what would happen.
Ring, ring. Ring, ring. Hello? Kaiju Espo speaking.
Hi, I have a question for GeekSpeak.
Oh, dear, they're off the air, but I can try to help you, I suppose.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. So, I'm downgrading from Well, okay, I'm having some trouble with USB. On my USB hard drive on Leopard, I recently updated, and my USB drive isn't really working with Leopard. And so I was just wondering if I should be downgrading or something?
You're driving after a Leopard?
No, I'm sorry, I already have Leopard, and I was just wondering if I need to downgrade to Tiger because Leopard with the USB is not working. It's a kind of a older USB drive. So should I move back to Tiger? Is it going to be more stable?
Leopards are vicious. You might have been better off with the Tiger.
Okay. Well, but I'm using Time Machine. I want to use Time Machine. Someone says it was a really good idea, but if I go to Tiger, am I going to lose that ability?
If you're looking for Tiger, you might look on a prairie or under a tree. I think they live there. You don't have to go back in time. Excuse me, I'm sorry, but my cats need to be fed, and there just aren't enough hours in the day to do this. But have a good day, and don't call this number again. Thank you, bye-bye.
You know, the relationship between geeks and our listeners here on the Central Coast is unique. There's no wall between you and the audience. There's no wall between you, the audience, and the content that we produce. In fact, your participation is a large part of the content of this show, for example. We volunteer time and energy each week to do what we do, to what we love to do, to continue a conversation about technology, science, and creativity with you, our listeners. And right now, we're asking you to do more than just listen, and more than just to call to participate in the content, but to become an active participant in your public radio station, KUSP, by making a financial contribution. You can go right now to kusp.org. Again, that's kusp.org, or call 888-777-1507. That's a toll-free number, 1-888-777-1507. Look, right now, we have $330 left to go on the anonymous UCSC faculty members' donation of $500, the matching grant. Please help use that money. Please help contribute to the station. 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. Your gift of support allows KUSP to continue to engage, inform, and entertain. To do your part, call right now. 888-777-1507.
And we got a pledge from Joan. Thank you to her. She says she's the opposite of a geek, but still loves Geek Speak. Thank you so much for the pledge on Pi Day.
That's great. And the polka music stopped.
Stopped when the phone rang.
That's good. So if you hear the polka music, please call 888-777-1507. We're suggesting a $10 a month donation. That's less than Al spends on cheese each month. That's a lot less than I spend on cheese each month. You can contribute right now to KUSP. Just go kusp.org or call 1-888-777-1507. All right. You went to China last week? When did you go to China?
Yep, it was about 2 weeks ago. This was Geek Tour to China 2009. And so I went with this group of geeks and hackers and makers and professors, and we had people that are part of the DIY world, like Wendell Oske, who runs Evil Mad Scientist Laboratories, and Nathan Seidel, who runs SparkFun, that sells a lot of tools for hackers and doers and makers. And then professors, Tom Igo from NYU, who teaches physical computing, Leah Beakley from MIT, who does craft technologies.
You had a lot of cool people on
the
trip.
It was really fun. And so the point was, so Bunny Wong, who created the Chumbi, which is this kind of hackable internet appliance.
Al, don't you use the Chumbi in one of the products you're doing?
The Chumbi, yeah, one of the startups I'm in right now, we're using the Chumbi as the interface.
Can you describe what it is, you guys? Because I've only heard about
really
it, I haven't
cool.
seen it.
Yeah, it's basically this squishy beanbag of a computer with a touch screen on the front. And it's hackable, so you can load widgets into it, so you can make it into a super-duper alarm clock that can stream internet radio, or you can hack it to, like, you know, drive a remote control car around as you tilt it back and forth.
And you can also just use it as your alarm clock, right, and then play MP3s from your library through it to wake you up, things
sure,
like that.
Yeah.
And the important thing is that they've combined a computer in a squishy beanbag.
That's all you need
think
in life.
About it.
That's
just
really
think
all you
about
need. It's a cute computer.
Yeah. Yeah, something soft to cuddle up to.
Yeah.
Do your email. So the guy that created that right. was there, and he kind of organized this trip?
Yeah, so he wanted to let geeks know about what the manufacturing capabilities in China are, because there's a gap between what the sort of DIY community in the U.S. is doing and then what commercial products are. And so there's this opportunity that, well, maybe if there's a way to connect people that are into making stuff with the manufacturing capabilities, maybe there's this opportunity for more stuff to get manufactured that's kind of more creative, more personalized, his technology. And so he was taking us around to a lot of the factories that he worked with to make the Chumbi product, which was this amazing tour, kind of like how it's made on the Discovery Channel, but a lot more things being done manually was actually the end result.
So were you going there partially because you kind of want to make Siftables a product? Possibly?
Yeah, that's where we're headed. So we were just going there kind of as an informational trip to learn how it's done and what we need to know in order to get there.
And what do you find? Like, what intrigued you about where China is with electronics?
So there's this amazing electronics market that was really fun. It's kind of like for geeks that hack on electronics, like the DigiKey or the All Electronics catalog. It was like walking through one of these catalogs, because imagine a huge bazaar, like many football fields in size, and also many floors. And you can just walk around, and every booth has some collection of weird stuff, like, you know, every knob you can imagine, or every switch or button, or piles of USB cables that are 3 feet high.
Excuse me, I'm drooling.
It's amazing. It's unlike any place I've ever seen. Like, people say that Akihabara in Japan, which is kind of the electronics zone,
I've been there, yeah,
is cool.
Yeah,
this
cool.
is like 10 times Akihabara.
Wow.
Now, is this only parts, or is this a complete product as well?
In this, it's sort of like it's layered. So at the bottom, it's individual components. And then as you go up higher and higher, you get from, like, you know, the transistors and diodes to the USB cables to the cell phones to the laptops as you go up.
It really
and up
is
and up.
Like a catalog, a physical catalog. Like,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so if you go there and you find a really cool button, there's no source for that button, right? This is just a one-off kind of thing. Or can you then buy it?
There is. So actually what most of these booths are, they're like the rep or the front booth for the factory where they actually make them.
Oh, wow. So it's like an ongoing electronics conference or show.
Right. So there's this huge gray market in China of new cell phones. There's these factories called the Shanzai, which roughly translates to Mountain Bandit. And it's this new kind of hacker-empowered engineer movement where these little companies are getting together, buying all these parts on the gray market in these marketplaces, and making cell phones that compete with the big guys.
Okay, so you're saying that individual engineers going there and developing, not with a lot of capital, not a big corporation, making a product, and then are they using the same tools of mass production to make it a real product? I mean, is this an environment that's kind of like the Wild West for electronics?
Yes, it is absolutely the Wild West.
Okay, that's
Shenzhen
cool.
Shenzhen is the Wild West.
Did you leave with your bags full of stuff?
We did.
Yeah.
What do they think when you go through customs? What is all this stuff?
They must see that anyone flying out of Hong Kong or Shenzhen must have bags full of parts.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah, and so we had actually a challenge, kind of a geek challenge, where we spent a day walking around this marketplace buying all these things, and we had this idea that we needed to make an object which would communicate time in some manner. And so everybody went back to their hotel room and hacked for an evening, and then we had a little expo, a little demo at the end.
What'd you come up with?
So I did a little circuit bending. So I found this circuit that would play this Chinese pop song over and over and over if you played it. And so we met these guys who have kind of the Chinese spark fun, and they gave us these Arduino boards that are like these little hackable microcontroller platforms.
Yeah, I think I've talked about Arduino boards on the show before.
Yeah.
They're basically the ideal microcontroller. USB port, runs off your computer. The software is really easy to develop. No, it's all open source, so you can modify it any way you want.
All these examples, it's very easy to get started.
Very cool. Yeah.
So these guys gave us these. They were actually really happy to see all these kind of open hardware geeks showing up in China. And so they were like, here, have one of our flagship products. And so I made this. I hacked the Arduino to tweak with the circuit and speed it up and slow it down periodically.
So nice.
It didn't actually tell time. But
pop music modified its tempo.
Right, yeah. Right.
Oh, very cool. What were the other things that people – well, on the trip, did you get to see like actual manufacturing processes where they're making cell phones?
It was we saw factories where they're making circuit boards, factories where they make – this one fabric factory makes 220 kilometers of Velcro every day.
Wow, you could do so much with that.
You could pave the streets of New York City with Velcro.
Oh, man.
Every day.
Seriously, is that much?
It's phenomenal. Well, I mean, maybe one strip of Velcro. Yeah, I don't know if you'd be able to go all the way.
So how do they make Velcro?
There's all these little amazing mechanical processes. We saw shoelaces being made. It's kind of this Victorian era, like Industrial Revolution kind of thing, where these threads are being pulled from these spools way at the back of this factory warehouse. And there's all these threads moving really fast and then getting woven together into this twined piece. And then it just ends up in this big bucket. And
just the individuals, or does it end up as a big spool? I mean, the question I have, I guess, is what's the thing at the end of a shoelace? What's that thing called?
Oh, the little plastic cap.
Yeah, what's
cap.
That called? What did you see that going put on?
We saw those put on. We didn't actually see how they were putting that on. Maybe that's the trade secret.
What's that thing called?
There's a name.
It's that and the top of a lampshade with that little thing that screws on. Uh-huh. Those two things.
Two good jobs to get somehow.
Yeah.
If you're in China.
An aglet. That's what it's called.
An aglet.
Yeah, A-G-L-E-T.
It's amazing how good. Wow. Ben's like a Wikipedia of that.
He knows everything.
He's got Wikipedia. Yeah.
yes, we all have computers here.
One interesting thing is all the workers in these factories actually get housing and food and basic health care. So it's kind of, I mean,
is that a good thing or is it creepy?
I don't know.
It's a thing.
It's a thing. It's sort of how the thing works over there. It's like, you know, if someone came to you and said, look, you can go work a super boring job for about 3 or 4 years, and then you're going to make, you know, $2 million at the end. And then you can go home and start your little storefront and retire.
Do they actually do that? They give them $2 million?
Well, no, kind of the equivalent.
It's proportionately.
Like, oh, really? Okay. And that was sort of like Bunny was sort of trying to geekily hack, not hack, but kind of understand the value proposition to a factory worker there.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what it is. Like, you go and do this really boring thing, but you're housed and fed and everything for a few years, and then you actually make what in that economy is kind of a lot of money. But interestingly, we saw the U.S. financial problems are definitely hitting China.
Yeah.
You know, 70,000 factories are closed, and the ones that are still open are operating at about 20%. So it's worldwide.
So it's definitely affecting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. But maybe now is the time for research and development. I mean, that's what they always say. When the economy is going down a little bit, spend more time thinking and more time developing new things. So in the upturn, you take advantage of it.
Right.
So inventing is the way to go.
Yeah.
Grab some electronics and play.
Yeah.
I want to thank everybody that's been contributing so far. We have $180 left to go on the pledge. I'd like you to call right now and make a donation. Miles, got any thank yous?
Yeah, thank you to an anonymous, quote, Luddite from Ben Lomond.
Mm-hmm.
And a thank you goes out to Trish, who likes the shows Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Car Talk, and, of course, Geek Speak.
The bulk of music's going, which means it's time for you to call and stop it. The phone number is 888-777-1507. Again, 888-777-1507. That was fast. Start it back up again. Okay, so...
And that works.
Don't let the polka win. Fight back against the polka.
You know, I've grown up here on the Central Coast. I'm native to Ben Lomond, actually, or I was born in Santa Cruz, Dominican Hospital. David, you as well.
I was born in Watsonville and grew up in Aptos.
Very cool. And then you've gone off in the rest of the world and made a name for yourself and working your PhD. You're finishing your PhD,
finishing right? In the next month or so, yeah.
And you've been listening to GeekSpeak for a while, and I'm assuming because it kind of helps you not be so much in New York.
Right. Well, I'm actually in Boston.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a fun show. I like you guys a lot, and it makes me feel connected to Santa Cruz County. Actually, mm-hmm. So it's kind of a nostalgia thing too.
And I think that's why a lot of people listen to GeekSpeak. We hear all the time from people that I hear all the time. I actually, my voice actually gets recognized sometimes, which is kind of fun in a coffee shop or so. And someone will say, you know, I listen to your show. I have no idea what you're talking about, but I love it. And I think the reason for that is that there is this giant world of technology out there that is complicated and confusing. And when you see, and it's scary to people, but when you see a group of people having fun with it and enjoying it at a level of, you know, conversing like you would about anything, but you're enjoying that aspect. When you listen in on that, you don't feel like that technology world is so scary, that it's something that is, even if you don't understand it completely, it is something that you can enjoy. You don't have to just be fearful of it. You don't have to be confused by it. And that's kind of what we do on GeekSpeak. And I just want to say that I remember years ago, I was really in, my father ran the station, and I grew up here at the KUSP, and I think of a lot of people here as family. And I remember wanting at some point in my high school years to be on air and have a radio show because all the cool cats did it. And so I went to Johnny Simmons, and I said, he was the music director at the time, and I said, I want to have a show. He's like, well, give me a demo tape, and show me what you like. I don't know anything about music, right? So I go home and I spend like an all night making a tape sampling of me introducing music and getting music to leave. But I turn it in, and it takes a while for Johnny to get back to me. He finally gets back to me. He calls me and he says, you know, Lyle, you don't know anything about music and you want to have a music show. That's really stupid. why don't you find something that you'd like to do? And all I heard at the time was a rejection of it and got me a little sad. But I stuck with it, and then later on, as GeekSpeak needed new hosts, I took over. And I've got to say that this, being able to participate in the community, being able to create the conversation that we have, is really meaningful to me, in both that I'm able to participate at the station that I grew up in and think of as family, but also because when I go out in the world and someone recognizes me and says, hey, I really like the show, I don't know what you're talking about, but I like it, it means that I'm helping to produce this community that I love. So anyway, David, thanks for coming on today. And
happy to be here.
Please call 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. We did get a full matching grant. Oh, I see. We want to say a thank you to Steve?
Steve, now.
Steve, thank you very much. For
he wants to do a challenge now.
Oh, he wants to do another challenge.
Another challenge, 5 minutes, $500.
Steve Laufer is the web developer here and a good friend of mine says, we just wiped off the last 500. Let's do a $500 challenge right now. He's contributing. He wants to match with you right now. So donate right now. You got 5 minutes to match it. That's a tall order from Steve. But I say do it. 888-777-1507. Again, 888-777-1507. One mouse.
And a thank you to Maureen, who likes the weekend programming and music and more, especially the new talk shows.
There are 5 minutes left. We're going to keep on doing the show and talk about tech. Call right now to match that grant, 888-777-1507, or be the first online pledge at kosp.org. What else did you enjoy? Okay, so
I have a question for David. These siftables, they all had little pictures of people's faces on them, and you could put them next to each other, the little things, and then they would look at each other and everything. There isn't any chance that they could somehow correspond with each other and rebel against their masters, is there? And sort of start taking over?
Well, sure. I mean, at this point, they're pretty obedient.
Little gangs of sifters out there?
Yeah, you
shiftables.
Can have that. Siftables, you know. that rebel.
Don't give them legs.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, actually, there should be a rule of robotics. Don't give them legs.
I was giving a talk at Park that used to be Xerox Park, and somebody suggested, well, what if you put these little hairs on the bottom, little cilia, and actually they could buzz and scoot themselves around the table.
There was a movie with the guy from Kiss in it. You know, what's his name? Remember?
Gene Simmons.
I don't know anything about
John Simmons.
Music,
yeah, Gene Simmons, and he had that little robots with legs like that went attacking everybody.
Yeah. It's creepy.
That's weird.
Okay, so you, David, you did.
I'm more optimistic.
You did the TED conference a little while ago, and we have $250 left to go on Steve's pledge. You've got about 2 minutes, so call right now, 888-777-1507.
Bring your polka music.
888-777-1507. Yeah, Ben, we need polka music. David, what did you see at TED conference that like blew you away?
You know, one of the things,
besides siftables, which you presented.
So. Yeah, I mean, so I'm a little technology oriented, but one of the things I thought was really cool was this guy Shai Agassi, who is the CEO of this company called A Better Place. That's trying to change the infrastructure for battery-powered vehicles. So they've got this plan for basically hot swappable batteries that you're going to be able to drive your car up to a swapping station, swap a new battery in, and then keep going. So you don't always have to come back to your garage to recharge.
Right, because that's the big problem with that technology is that you've got to charge the battery, and it takes time to charge the battery.
Yeah, it can take all night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's producing infrastructure that allows people to kind of have like a lease agreement, and gas stations have battery packs. They're fully charged. You go over, you drop your old one off, pick up a new one.
Exactly. So it's more like a service. It's kind of like the cell phone model where you're not actually buying that airtime or something. You just rent it every month.
Yeah,
and
cool.
That's the problem with cars is that batteries are bad and they go bad after a couple of years. So if you don't have to buy the battery, you can just keep getting new ones.
Nice. Thank you very much. Well, this is kind of wrapping up the end of Geek Speak. You still got a minute to call in. The phone numbers are 476. No, that's the normal number. The number is 888-777-1507. We have $250 left to go on Steve's challenge. I really hope that we match that during the show. You really could call right now and help do that. Any amount of money that you donate works for us. 888-777-1507.
Come on, you're really not going to let the polka music win, are you?
That would be a tragedy. A total tragedy.
Now, I do have to thank Nikki, who works on Monday, listens a lot to Diane Rehm, Geek Speak, Dr. Don, Jeannie.
You know what, Miles?
Listens every morning at noon.
We'll do those thank yous in just a minute. Geek Speak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 28 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. Broadcasting in HD radio on 88.9 FM, this is Central Coast Public Radio KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Otto, on the web at kosp.org. Coming up next is Car Talk. The geeks today were Miles Elam, Ben Jaffe, Al Luckow. Our guest was David Merrill. David, if you're in town again, I'd love you to come back.
Sounds great. I would love to return.
We have 30 seconds left. We have $150 left. Call right now, 888-777-1507. 888-777-1507. Miles, 20
and
seconds.
Thank you to Peter, who listens on Saturday a.m. and in the winter, likes Spring and Summer Works, and Dr. Don and Geek Speak.
Woohoo! And I just want to let you know that next week we'll be talking about Flash and Flex and applications online. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. Thanks for participating.